He introduced me to the Catholic Church from the moment we started dating. And I couldn't become Catholic soon enough after we were married, after our son was born. It was an instant thing.
So you were never antagonistic to the Catholic Church. You're always. Did you always know when you got married, eventually I'm going to become Catholic? No.
But I have to say that I jumped the gun going through my classes, and I went to Father Cox and I said, I need to become Catholic right now. And he did a special mass Pentecost Sunday, and the anointment, everything. It's just a feeling that you, when I was anointed and became Catholic that day, I felt the Holy Spirit come just right through me.
Oh, really? It was like a palpable feeling.
It was very, very, which is the same thing that I felt in Rome.
Yeah. So let's lead up. You again, been married 40 years, and Tom, you know, you and I have talked many times about your work for Hike for Life. Maybe we can just briefly talk about that. This is not your career, but it's something you do, and it's clearly something very, very important to you. So do you want to briefly just talk about why Hike for Life? Because ultimately, that's how you got to Rome, was because you made a donation through Hike for Life, right?
So I've been part of Hike for Life as president for 24 years now. Hike for Life started in 1973. So there was a gentleman, many gentlemen, that carried this through until I took it over in 2001. And as the years progressed, we started contributing to more and more pro-life ministries in the area, as they were forming, and one of those ended up being Guadalupe Radio. Mm-hmm. When you guys formed, we started giving you a stipend every year, largely because every time I turn on Guadalupe Radio, I hear the most wonderful things, and so often it's the voice that I wish I could be saying, regarding our pro-life brother, mm-hmm. Pro-life ministries and our unborn brothers and sisters. And it's always heartwarming. So that's what we've been doing. That's what we continue to do. And that's kind of how we got to this point.
So the donation last year was enough to get you into the drawing be eligible to win the pilgrimage. And, this is a network drawing. And so I think you all had donated like $1,500. You got one chance. Yeah. And lo and behold, God was showering his... I kind of almost think, in light of what we're going to be talking about in y'all's experience there, it's almost like this was ordained by God, that he wanted you two to be there. But it wasn't won by you personally. It was won by Hike for Life. And that causes a little bit of a complication to the story, doesn't
it? So I want everybody to realize we did not donate anything to Guadalupe Radio to be in any sort of contest. This was a gift that we give you every year. Mm-hmm. The fact that we got entered into this was, a godsend, I guess is the best way to say it.
Yeah.
But so we presented you the funds, just like we do with all of our pro-life ministries, and because we consider you one. And you gave me a phone call one day and told me that Hike for Life had won. And I was really scratching my head. What am I supposed to do with this?
Because it's not you. It's Hike for Life. It's a nonprofit organization,
so
right?
So I reached out to my vice president, who is he's my sounding board, James Widman. He's out of Prince of Peace. And we talked a little bit about it. I said, James, as much as I would love to take this, I don't see how I can, because this is not really mine. And so I told him what my intention was going to be, is that the next board meeting was to put it up either for sale so that we could add more money to the donations that we'll have for the next year, this year, 2025, or we'd give it back to you and let you guys find somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And so James called every one of my board members, told them what I intended to do, and asked them to not allow me to have that motion brought to the floor.
Because they'd have to have a second motion, and nobody's going to second it.
So as president, I can't make a motion. I can only ask for a motion, and nobody would do that. So it was an eerie silence, and I'm not used to that.
Because they wanted you to go.
They wanted me to go. That's what they said. After I called it out three times and asked the question, they said, Tom, we want you to take this trip.
Yeah. And you're thinking, who should I bring? Yeah. So you all go, and I think it was, April 30th was your first date there.
That was the day that we flew.
And Lisa, what did you think when Tom came to you and said, guess what? The board wants us to go. What was your first thought?
It's a very humbling, very, very humbling experience to have this amazing gift. And it was exciting, scary. I'd never flown internationally at all.
Oh, really?
Ever. Okay. I've never been out of the United States, barely been through the United States. It was a godsend. Mm-hmm. It was truly a gift from God. I think that we were supposed to be there. And who knew that?
Now, you have the opportunity to choose your pilgrimage.
Yes.
You didn't have to go to Rome, so why Rome? Why?
Were so many places that we could go, and our first thought was we would love to go to the Holy Land, because that was one of the options.
But nobody's going to the Holy Land.
No one's able to go to the Holy Land at the time, and I guess they still aren't at this moment. But anyway, so we were just kind of scratching our heads. We didn't know what we wanted to do. And I was kind of getting up to that date where I had to make a decision, and I went one night. I'm looking through my phone. I'm looking at all the different ones, and I see this pilgrimage to Italy to the Holy Doors, and lo and behold, Bishop Cahill is going to be leading this pilgrimage. He was the religious leader for the pilgrimage. Bishop Cahill is out of Victoria, and he's a friend of mine, and. I can't believe all the times I flipped through this, I didn't see this beforehand. But he was the state chaplain for the Knights of Columbus. For 19 years, I was the state pro-life chairman. And for two of those years, he was our state chaplain. So we got to work with each other a little bit. And he's so much fun to be around. He's just full of energy, and he's so approachable, and he's just a lovely person to be around.
Now, when you flew out there, yeah, what's going to happen, just to kind of get cut to the chase here, is you're going to be there when Pope Leo XIV was being elected as Pope, right? But did you, where were you in, like, when you left, had Francis already passed away? Was he sick, or what was the status?
I believe he had passed away by then.
Okay,
yes,
so you knew this was like, but when you said, we're going to go to Rome, you didn't know this was all going to happen, right?
No,
so this
not
all
even.
Came as a surprise.
No, because when we chose the date, everything was fine. You know, Pope Francis was he was ailing, but there was no issues there. And so the first thing we're all wondering is like, are we going to get to go into the Sistine Chapel? It's like that was the most important thing.
You thought it was more limiting than thing. So what were your thoughts, Lisa, knowing that, wow, we're kind of going in a historic time?
My thought was, there is no way they're going to, elect a pope while we're there. There's no way we're going to miss it, because the conclave has started 2 days prior to us leaving. I believe it started on... The first one was Tuesday night, and he was elected, on Thursday.
When you flew out there, the conclave had already gathered together.
Well, I think they were in process of getting there. Okay. I don't think they had actually started to gather yet.
Because it started on the Tuesday, because the first vote was we got there on a Friday, and they started that following Tuesday.
Wow. So where were you in, like, there? You saw the black smoke, and you were there witnessing it with all the people?
Yes. So Wednesday we witnessed the black smoke from one of the boats, and that was kind of late in the evening, and we went back to our hotel, and then the next day there was an enormous amount of things that we did. One thing about these trips, be prepared to walk and walk briskly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so we went through the Vatican Museum as one of the things that we did that day on May 8th. And then we found our way into to St. Peter's. The thing about going into St. Peter's, it was so beautiful, is being part of a pilgrimage on a holy year, which is what this was, we got to carry a special pilgrimage cross, our group. And so every so often, they would hand off the cross to another couple. And they would walk down the boulevard with St. Peter's in front of us. And you know, we'd be chanting prayers all the way. And it was very, very special. And there's a little something special about that particular carrying the cross that if we have time, I'll share with that.
Yeah. And there were big crowds, bigger than you could have expected. Mm-hmm. What was the, for lack of a better word, just the energy, the vibe there for you, Lisa?
It was amazing to be surrounded by all like-minded Christians.
Mm-hmm.
It was a beautiful experience.
Universal, too.
Universal.
Mean, people from all different countries of the world, right?
Yes. People we met at the Vatican Museum are the same people that we had met the night before while we watched the Black... They were from Chicago, standing right next to us. And we ran into them at Vatican Museum the next
day. Little
did
they know one of their own was about to become Pope, right?
Yeah, right before we went walking through the Holy Door carrying the pilgrimage cross... Beautiful, beautiful. What an amazing experience to be in St. Peter's Basilica the day that the Pope was elected.
Yeah.
And to be right there on the porch, feet away from. It was amazing.
I want to get back to that because that's a moment that everybody listening remembers where they were, what they were doing. But most people listening were not there in Rome. They, you know, I was in my office. But you wanted to mention something else about
it's carrying the cross. So we were doing all these prayers, and I'm going to preface this by saying that as state pro-life chairman for the Knights, I started a prayer request that each brother knight in their family tried to do 3 Hail Marys for the unborn every day. And so during the pilgrimage, when we were in the CC, Bishop Cahill asked me if I would lead a rosary. And I also did the 3 Hail Marys. So every rosary that got said during the pilgrimage, they did the 3 Hail Marys. Which was nice. And the reason why I say that is because, this was just the way it worked out. So Lisa and I were handed the cross and we're walking, and Bishop Cahill's doing this set of prayers. And there was one time where we had to stop in front of a church, and the one thing you're supposed to do is 3 Hail Marys.
I
took that as a blessing and a thank you, dear Lord. And so we continued to walk, and then we handed off the cross, and then we ended up doing a rosary. And we're doing a rosary as we walk into St. Peter's. And it's just St. Peter's is so massive. It's like 3 soccer fields long and 1 wide. It's just insane.
Tom and Lisa Clark are my guests. They're from St. Michael's Parish in Garland. And as you are listening to this story, we're still reaching this crescendo, this moment when Pope Leo was elected. And I definitely want to spend have enough time for that. But to Lisa, talk about the... Because nobody knows exactly when the smoke is becoming white, but where were you when you saw the white smoke, and what was the atmosphere and the reaction?
You know, the most amazing part is that I knew that we were going to hear what they had voted around 6. Mm-hmm. It was 6 that day.
6 p.m.
And I'm going to believe it was, maybe it was 5:30. So we had exited St. Peter's. We were on the porch, big, massive opening, you know, and we're looking at the Swiss guards, and we chose to, let's go ahead and go over to the post office, you know, mail ourselves our postcard from Vatican City.
Yeah.
So we spent some time doing that. And I'm like, you know, Tom, we had dinner plans at 7. It was our last dinner as a group. And I'm like, yeah, you know, they should be making an announcement. Let's stay and see that black smoke one more time, doubting that they would ever come up with an elected.
Because it was only the second day.
What day of the week was this?
This was a Thursday.
Thursday
and you were going to leave the pilgrimage on what day?
The very next day, early in the morning.
Early in the morning.
So you're like, this is our last chance.
We're hanging out here. It wasn't so crowded that, you know, we just walked off the porch, went to the post office, and then they had the sections kind of segregated, you know. They had this front section really close to the porch, and
mm-hmm.
I keep calling it a porch, but it's the
plaza, I don't know what you call it,
And we were
courtyard or
in that very. We just walked. I said, "Come on, let's just hang out right here. Just maybe they'll do it." And it's getting close. It was 6 o'clock, and we're like, "We've got it. We've got to walk back to our hotel." Was very close to St. Peter's.
We had not
Square.
Had an ounce of water since one. So
yeah,
we were both getting parched, and it was getting a little. It was getting late. So.
Uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Uncomfortable.
So they had this first section, and then like a little hallway, and then or an aisle, and then the next section back, and so we got up to go. Okay, we've got to get to dinner, and as we were starting to walk back, that's when That's when this commotion began. But it was really these little
seagulls
that were up by the pipe, and they were white, and we were all laughing and giggling, and then all of a sudden, that's when the white smoke came.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so there was a couple seagulls. They have, of course, the teleprompters there. Everybody saw white, so they all started to cheer, and then they realized that, oh, these are birds. But it wasn't 2 minutes later that the smoke actually did come out.
Okay.
Yeah. And that, before that point, you could walk around. There was plenty of room, and that's when everybody just flooded.
It converged. Okay. It was just
converged.
Mayhem.
Yeah. Yeah. It was just standing room only.
It really was.
It was
incredible.
Yeah.
And a lot of excitement, I imagine.
Oh, my gosh, yes. It's just everybody was just on edge.
The emotions, the crying.
Was it cheering? Was it quiet? Was it, it was loud.
Flags were waving. People were cheering. It was just, it was mayhem in a wonderful way.
Did you at this point, had you done any kind of research on the front runners, or did you have a person that you thought might be elected Pope, or did you know the names or any of that kind of knowledge?
Well, I think I did, but I mean, if you ask me who they are now, I don't think I can tell you. But it certainly was not. Pope Leo. His name's escaping me now. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Robert Provost. Of Chicago.
Yes,
Cardinal. Yeah.
I had not heard of him before.
I had neither.
And the gentleman that was standing next to us was from Ireland. And he had come for this purpose. He was staying there that week, and he says it's an American. I'm looking at him. It's like, really?
so you heard the Habemus Papum,
yes.
And then what were you thinking as you're about to find out who the Pope was, and you're there, Lisa?
I was the pure excitement that we were witnessing this historic event once in a lifetime, for sure. And then an American, you know, the Irishman standing next to us who spoke the language that they were speaking. We did not. Mm-hmm. Like, I guess you don't speak. No,
you don't speak Latin.
We don't.
So he's the one that told you this is an American?
He says it's American. You don't seem excited. It's because I'm in shock. I was in shock.
Yeah.
It was the most amazing, beautiful. And there's this picture that Tom captured of my excitement, and we're standing facing, he's facing the basilica, and what wasn't visible to the naked eye was this glow around
the dome of St. Peter's.
Yes, yeah. It was not visible to the naked eye, but when you look at my picture, you just know, you know, that it was like an angel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. Just stunning.
And what was the reaction of the crowd in general? Was everybody just elated?
Absolutely. Pure elation.
Yeah. And then when he actually came out, and he was very formally dressed,
yes.
And he spoke first, I think, in Italian,
yes.
Right? He didn't speak English.
English at all.
No. Right, right. And
And the Irishman that was standing next to us was translating for us.
Oh, really? Wow,
it was beautiful.
This guy was like an angel for y'all, wasn't he?
He kept talking about peace and kept talking, you know, Pope Leo was.
So, and then you stayed up late. Was there like a party? What do you do after Pope Leo?
We already had a parting dinner with our group, and everybody was a little late to this, but it was It was just wonderful.
Yeah. And then you get on the plane the next morning and head back, right?
Yeah, exactly. We were up at 5:30 or 6 o'clock in the morning and tooling through the streets and getting on a bus to get to the airport. So, you couldn't have timed it any better.
Yeah. So this was in, early May? Is that right?
Yes. Yeah.
And that you come back and here we are, doing this in October. Now that you've had, months, half a year to kind of process this. What does it mean to you now, Lisa?
I think Tom said it best earlier to me, which I didn't realize, is that I went through a transformation while I was there. I truly did. I didn't realize how much going to Rome changed me. Mm-hmm. The history, seeing. Other than being there for this amazing event, we went to St. Mary's Major, which had a thorn from the crown, part of the cross. I mean, all these relics and all this beautiful history brought it all to life, made it real.
Yeah,
it's just real. And I've never had that. I wasn't raised Catholic. It wasn't what was. It's not taught like it is taught in, the Catholic faith.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It was a beautiful gift.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it all started with a gift from Hike for Life to Catholic Radio, and then what a blessing it is in return. We've got just 30 seconds. Last thought, Tom?
Oh, I can't say thank you enough to GRN. I can't say thank you enough to all the good people who are part of Hike for Life and to our good Lord for this wonderful gift that we were allowed to have.
Yeah, it's a beautiful story. Well, thanks to both of you for coming in and telling your story. It's certainly a beautiful one. Tom and Lisa Clark from St. Michael Parish in Garland. And, of course, you can go to hikeforlife.com and find out more about Hike for Life.
Hikeforlifetexas.com.
Hikeforlifetexas.com. So thanks to you both. This has been the interview of the week here on the Guadalupe Radio Network. And if you have suggestions for future interviews, you can always email me, DavePalmer@grnonline.com. God bless you. Thanks for listening.
The 40 Days for Life fall campaign has ended, but the need to support pregnant moms and pray for an end to abortion continues year-round. Please join us in covering the 10 DFW Planned Parenthood locations with prayer and fasting and community outreach 365 days a year. For more information and to sign up to pray, please visit ProLifeDFW.com. Your presence on the sidewalk can save a baby's life. Visit ProLifeDFW.com.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the North Texas Interview of the Week here on the Guadalupe Radio Network on both 9:10 a.m. and also KCPP 11:40 a.m. out in the Fort Worth area, broadcasting on both of the stations for this. And, we often do a lot of different topics on this show, and sometimes it's, we're excited and celebrating things or events going on, and there's certainly a time for that. This interview is going to be a little bit more somber, even though the folks I have in studio with me are very joyful folks. We're talking about something pretty serious, and that is the persecution of Christians in Nigeria in particular. Nigeria, as you may or may not know, is one of, if not the most persecuted country in the world. And some of the statistics are absolutely staggering, but I'll share some of those with you. Recently, Fox News had Raymond Arroyo on talking about this, and there is not much attention being given to this, and this is the reason why we're doing this, is to bring some attention to what is happening in Nigeria. And I want to thank my three in-studio guests. They are all representing the indigenous people of Biafra, and they are returning guests. We've done this before, and it's always an honor to be able to bring some attention to this pretty dire situation. So I want to thank Dr. Tina Madu Odidika, who is from St. Bartholomew Parish in the Diocese of Fort Worth. And she is here with not biological brother and sister, but her brother and sister in Christ, her brother in Christ, Charles Owuzi, And also her sister, and he and Charles is from St. Michael Parish in Bedford, and also her sister in Christ, Chioma Marcel, who is from St. Maria Goretti Parish in Arlington. So welcome to all of you, and thank you so much for being here to talk about this very important topic.
Thank you, Dave.
So, yeah, we've done this at least, two or three times, Dr. Tina, and nothing seems to be changing, and that's why we want to continue to bring this to people's attention. And I thank everybody who's listening right now, and hopefully in the course of this interview, you're going to realize that we need to pray, and perhaps there's more that we can do individually. But as I mentioned, Raymond Arroyo was on Fox News recently, and you sent me the clip, Dr. Tina, so thank you for that. And since 2009, over 52,000 Christians have been killed in Nigeria, 7,000 this year alone. 18,000 churches have been burned down since 2009. 18,000, that's just staggering. 5 million Christians have been displaced, and Raymond made a point of saying, just to kind of bring it down to a daily level, 35 Christians killed every single day in Nigeria. Those are staggering numbers, and so welcome and thank you for being here.
Thank you very much, Dave. Thank you very much, Guadalupe Radio, for having us again this morning. It has been a wonderful relationship between you and us, and we want to really appreciate all Christian listeners, and especially the Catholic Christians in North Texas who pray for us now because you have heard our voices. This is a dire need for a call for more prayer and more action. So we come this morning kind of with heavy heart, because now that this issue has bubbled up to the forefront, we want everyone to really now please focus, because our senator from Texas has taken up this issue, and we thank him immensely.
Ted Cruz.
Yes. Yeah. Senator Ted Cruz of Texas have taken it up, and other senators from around the United States have joined him. Ted Budd of North Carolina has joined him. Josh Hawley of Missouri has joined him. Pete Rickett from Nebraska, James Langford from Oklahoma. These men have joined and petitioned our Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, to place Nigeria back on the list of countries with particular concern. And the CPC list, Nigeria has been on it before. They took him off. They took them off. And now they want to place Nigeria back on that list. But that's not all that we have come to ask this morning, Dave. We are asking them to do more. We are asking them to give Nigeria a United Nations supervised referendum so that the sections of Nigeria that calls themselves a whole country right now who want to separate from Nigeria can go, because that's where the Christians live. We are from Biafra territory in Nigeria, and the Biafra territory is 95% or more Christians, and they target us no matter where we live in Nigeria. They target to burn churches, kill Christians, and kill reverend fathers. We've come here and told you how many reverend priests that they have killed in the northern part of Nigeria, and most of those priests are from Biafra territory. We're from the southeastern part of Nigeria, and they continue to kill us. We want a referendum to separate from Nigeria that has become an Islamic state. And because that they're an Islamic state, they carry out Islamic agenda. And these people believe in jihad. And the jihad is going on right now in Nigeria, and that's why many Christians are being killed, many pastors are killed, churches are burned. But Nigeria wants to bury that. The government wants to bury that fact. So now they're panicking because the United States of America and its government has taken a note of that. So that's what we're here to tell Christian brothers and sisters out there, to continue to do the work that I know that you've been doing. You've been praying for us. Now we have to pray for the senators that I have mentioned this morning. Thank you, Dave.
Yeah, thank you. And Charles, let me bring you into the conversation. Dr. Tina explained how this is a jihad, and maybe we can talk about more specifically who it is that's carrying this out. I know on the Raymond Arroyo Fox report, he put the blame on Boko Haram, which is an Islamic terrorist group. I even did a search on Google, and it said, yes, they are a designated terrorist group recognized by the United States, the European Union. It is engaged in years of brutal violence, killing tens of thousands of people in northeastern Nigeria. That's even on a Google search. So this is pretty much common knowledge. And also, Raymond mentioned Fulani herdsmen that are just traveling around and shooting people. So he also said 22 Islamic terrorist groups have safe haven in Nigeria. And so I think we understand that Nigeria itself, as Dr. Tina said, is Islamic, but why is the world allowing this? And maybe you can give us some more details about who these people are that are carrying out the persecution.
Thank you, Dave. Let me go to the foundation quickly. The foundation for jihad in Nigeria was laid far back in 1804, and it came from the patriarch of the Fulanis. His name was Uthman Danfodio. Then Uthman Danfodio, we are seeing today his descendants, and they claim that Nigeria is the estate of their ancestor. So, but Nigerians didn't wake up to realize that on time. But from 1804 till today, what has blossomed is a complete one, jihad. Secondly, Fulanization. By Fulanization, I mean turning everybody, every tribe, to become and accept the Fulani family. But now, talking about the number of terror groups in Nigeria today, from one ethnic group, from this Fulani ethnic group, you can count not less than 12. In other words, it's like a mushroom. Every day they are coming. We have the Boko Haram, which is popular because of 2015, when they used it to chase away a Christian president from Nigeria. But from that president, Goodluck Jonathan, but from that time onwards, you have Islamic State of West African Province. You have the Al-Qaeda in Maghreb. You have Ansaru. Then you have Fulani herdsmen. And then you have Lukawara. Lukawara is located in Sokoto. Sokoto is the seat of the caliphate. And in Sokoto, the Lukawara terror group is being financed and weaponized by Islamic clerics in that part of the world. Then you have Mamuda. Mamuda is still operating. Now, the latest one is the one they call, I can't even pronounce it very well, Owolo Wolo, something like that. These ones, they have divided Nigeria into like a franchise into several sections. But the objective is one, Islamize, take over. Initially, it was for the north, but now they are coming south. Mamuda is now taking charge of the northwest, where you have Kogi, you have Kwara State. They are there killing. Then Boko Haram is mainly stationed in Borno State area. Then the herdsmen are coming east to Biafran region. So what you see is just the truth. There are many of them. We're not even talking about Maitasine and other groups. But one thing I want to state again is that when you hear bandits or banditry, they are talking about terror groups. Nigerian state has gotten the media not to call them terrorist groups. They call them bandits so that the weight will be very simple. So that is what is going on. And the media in Nigeria is not helping to put the West out on daily basis. Even as we come in for this interview today, a lot of people are displaced. A lot of killings is going on right now in Nigeria. So it is true, sir.
Yeah, well, thank you very much, Charles. Chioma, let me ask you, I believe that all three of you have relatives and loved ones that are in Nigeria now. What are they saying about just daily life? Is it dangerous just to live your daily life and go to work and raise kids as a Christian in Nigeria, which is a horrible way to live your life? What are they saying when you communicate with people back home?
Okay, I have siblings back home. I have brothers, I have sisters, I have nieces, I have nephews. And like the way we are saying it, from my own tribe, which is the Igbo tribe, basically the Biafrans, we are like 98% Christians. And when you talk about all this massacre, when you talk about all these killings, it's just probably from the Igbo tribe. Mm-hmm. Because either they are living in the north, they are living in the east, they are living in the west. So it's just like a targeted killings of Christians, mostly Biafrans in general. And the news I hear from my sisters is not tasty. It's not something you can say, okay, it's good, I can wake up. Nigeria is where you go to sleep, you're not sure of waking up from sleep.
Mm.
The kind of news we're getting. You go to work, you're not sure of getting to your destination.
Yeah, yeah.
And why this is so is the way it's going on. The Nigerian government felt it's something very good to encourage terrorism in Nigeria. Because as we speak today, the Nigerian government is made up of, they call it the Muslim ticket, where the president is a Muslim, the vice president is a Muslim. So with all this, it's just like in 2015, they even came out to testify to that they imported the terrorists to come into Nigeria to help them get into office. And since 2015, that terrorism has been, it's growing every day.
Yeah, yeah.
So when you go to the southeast now, you can hear actually they come out as the terrorists they are in the north. Burning churches, destroying homes, killing people, chasing people around. But the systematic way they are using to come over to the southeast is what is happening. Canada already thanked the Nigerian government because they are made up of this. They call themselves the APC party. And those are the groups that imported these terrorists into Nigeria. But Canadian courts actually thanked them, the terrorists. So I don't know why America is not seeing them like that too.
Yes. Well, thank
yeah.
You.
And another country also, tagged Nigerian police and military as the least trusted people in the whole world.
Yeah.
So, and why are they tagging them that way? Because the Nigerian government are okay to kind of reintegrate the terrorists. They said they have been rehabilitated. They reintegrate them into the military. They reintegrate them into the police. And what they do, the systematic way they use to continue with their jihad is sending them down east, which is the Biafra line, to continue with the jihad. Actually, in the north, they are coming openly as full jihadism. But in the north, they're using them as Nigerian military and police. But what do you expect with somebody who is already had that mind of jihadism? You give them a gun to, they say, protecting the integrity of Nigeria. But they have them on the streets. From one checkpoint to the other, it's just like a pole from here to here. If you don't see the police, you see the military. And these are people who are imported from outside Nigeria in the name of terrorism to help them. And now they said it's okay to put them, rehabilitate them, reintegrate them into the military. That their mentality of jihadism is still in them. And that is why the terrorism is so rampant in the east. They're using them as the military. Oh, this person, oh, he's a potential threat to Nigeria. Then what do you expect a terrorist to do when they see a Christian who doesn't speak their language, a Christian who doesn't believe in the same how they worship? So once they meet them on the road, that tendency of them shooting at sight is always there. Mm-hmm. That tendency of them kidnapping innocent citizens is there because they are still trying to achieve that goal of jihadism. But they are using, covering it up with Nigerian military uniform, covering it up with Nigerian police uniform. But what are they doing? Jihadism, killing the Christian, genocide against Christian. In the East, what they are doing is disappearing the youths there. They take away your son or your daughter in the name of, oh, he had dreadlocks, he has a saggy pants, which is nothing. It's nothing to even accuse somebody of. But they see it as an evil. They see somebody drinking beer. Oh, it's against Allah. You don't have to drink beer. Right. They are taking you in for there, from there. And sometimes you don't come back.
Yeah.
You're killed. So these are the threats that we're having back home for right now.
Yeah, I think about the fact that I started off talking about this being an interview about the persecution of Christians in Nigeria. Persecution is too light of a word. This is a genocide, as you say. You know, persecution is way less than what's really going on there. I have in studio with me for this interview of the week three members of the indigenous people of Biafra, Dr. Tina, Charles, and Chioma, and have heard from each of you now. And let me go back to you, Dr. Tina. And you think that at a very minimum, the United States would return to a country of particular concern. And so a two-part question, why was it ever taken off of that list? And now, of course, there's a movement, but that's a bare minimum, right, of just getting them back on the list. Well, what would you like to see in addition to that?
Please, 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 let's all appeal to our lawmakers in the United States of America that this genocide is real. We have come here and told you how our villages are sacked and burned, and it's churches that are burned. It's people's homes that are burned simply because they're Christians. So persecution of Christians, you know, in America, we can sit in our pews and think it's something that used to happen. You know, in the old days, there used to be Christian uprising against Christians. No, it is happening today. In Biafra territory, the southeastern part of Nigeria. It's happening in the north. It's happening in the west. It's happening all over Nigeria. If you're a Christian in Nigeria, you are in great peril. You are going to die one way or the other, or somebody will oppress you somehow. Because what they do also is to use their influence and drag you to a Sharia court. So please, what you must do for us is to ask your lawmakers. We already have five individuals and our own Ted Cruz being the leader, the champion for this bill that they have now tendered to the Senate. Please, please, make sure you call them. Call everyone up. Call even the Democrats. Call anyone you know. Tell your friends all across the country to start calling them, to please support putting Nigeria back on that list of countries of particular concern. But please don't stop there. Tell them that these Christians need a state of their own from Nigeria so that they can survive, because what they want to do to us is what they did in Turkey, is what they have done in Eastern Europe. They want to supplant the indigenous peoples with the Fulani jihadists. They want to take over the land, be the ones who live there. They want to kill as many of us as possible so that when they come into our land, it will be just a few of us left and they can take over. They have so far done so in Nigeria, as a matter of fact. Nigeria now is known as an Islamic state. It's one of the Islamic states in the world. Nigeria does not have as many Muslims as they have Christians. There are more Christians in Nigeria than there are Muslims. But they have achieved this thing about calling Nigeria an Islamic state. It shouldn't be. So if they want an Islamic state in Nigeria, let the Christians go. Ask them for a United Nations supervised referendum in Nigeria so that the Christian nations, indigenous peoples who are Christians, can have their own separate state from Nigeria. That's what we're asking for. That's why we're advocating for the Biafra nation today. Because if you don't give us our own nation so we can run our own affairs, they will continue to come. These people are like ants. They don't stop. They did this. We have seen many countries where they did this. This has already, they've been successful in many cases in Eastern Europe, in some African countries. So what will stop them this time in Nigeria? Nobody can stop them except by separating the indigenous peoples of Biafra and maybe the indigenous peoples of Yoruba from the Islamic states that they want to have in the northern part of Nigeria. So we're asking for a United Nations supervised referendum.
Okay, thank you. And I just have a couple minutes remaining, and I just want to give each of you a chance. We're literally like 2 or 3 minutes. We'll start with Chioma. Your last words of advice for people listening, or what would you tell them? Take about a minute.
Okay. Actually, our advice will be, like my sister already said it, we need prayers. We don't want to be Muslims. Since we were born, we've been raised as either from our regular traditional way to Christianity. And we don't believe in violence. We believe we are welcoming people. We are people who are ready to bring everybody close to us. We bring development to wherever we go. So we don't want to continue to be in one Nigeria, because Nigeria is a threat to every living being in that country as we speak today. So if the world will speak up, because I know they've been silent for a very long time, if the world will come up and speak up, let the United Nations know that they are still holding a whole lot of innocent lives down in Nigeria as we speak. So if the United Nations can call it up and listen to the voices of the people, is out there in the social media, they wouldn't say they are not hearing all this. People are dying every day like chickens on the road. Some of them, you don't even find their corpses. It's just like it's so devastating that we hear the news that is coming up from home. It's like, are you sure you're, like one of my sisters in the church, the other day was telling me he called his son and he didn't hear him. Then he started panicking. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I want to give Charles the last word here. Thank you very much. Charles got about a minute before we got in this. What would you say?
What I would say is that I want to add to the question you asked Dr. Tina. The question was how and why did the taking Nigeria out of country of particular concern came about? We don't know. But for reasons best known to government, Blinken was the one that took it out. But we know one thing. Nigeria government can bribe even devil with Nigerian oil money. I rest it there.
Yeah, well, thanks be to God that we do have some politicians who are trying to get it back at least to the country of particular concern. All right, so Dr. Tina, let me just say this. People, is there a website? Is there something that people can go and learn more about this? We got 30 seconds. What would you say?
There is a website. It's www.ipob.org.
Okay, that's in the Indigenous People of Biafra, IPOB.org, right?
That's
correct.
They
can find out more there. Of course, pray, and as you said, ask your legislators to get behind this.
Pray and work.
Okay, well, thank you, Dr. Tina, and also Charles and Chioma for coming in. God bless you, and we'll continue to...
Thanks for listening to KATH 910 AM Frisco, Dallas, Fort Worth, and North Texas on the Guadalupe Radio Network. Catholic radio for your soul. Heard also at grnonline.com and on your smartphone.